Welcome to Set the Captives Free Ministries with Pastor Frank Scavarja. This radio broadcast is dedicated to teaching, preaching evangelism, and Christ-centered programs. Our focus is on exposing false doctrines, cults, and occultisms. Praise God in all things. We hope you're blessed.
This is Willie Needham here, your evangelist of Set the Captives Free Ministries. It's actually been a while since I've done a live show, so it's kind of fun to be back into the swing of things. So today the message is called, Who's Fooling Who? Not who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third, but who's fooling who? A little bit of it is about my testimony. Most people think that in order to be saved, you have to be hurting, and you have to be poor and just in such a life of destitution. The fact of the matter is that not everybody has that. I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth, at least a sterling silver spoon. I truly lack nothing with myself. My parents, they stayed together this entire time. They were well off enough to where I lacked nothing. They loved me very much, and they were nothing but good to me. So, you would think that I would be a very, very unlikely candidate for being a wicked human being. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you thought that I was an unlikely candidate for a wicked human being, that just shows how well I had you fooled. For those of you who knew me for the first 18 years of my life, I was a desperately wicked young man. I really was. I faked it. And, the reason I was able to fake it so well is because I looked the part. I knew all the lingo. I had a Bible. I even read it from time to time. I would dress up nice for Sunday. I'd have a big old smile on my face. And I would keep my mouth shut whenever my dad was presenting me to all of his church friends because he didn't want me to embarrass him in front of them. I always figured that stuff was just typical. But, need to. So, I had it down to a science. And the reason I was able to fool everybody so well, is because I believed that that's what I was supposed to be doing. I believed that I was supposed to just be doing this because I'm supposed to be doing it. I believed I was supposed to just be looking like this. So the night that I got saved, when I told all my closest friends what I had done the night before, they were very shocked. They didn't have a clue that I was even capable of doing this sort of stuff. But I certainly was. I had been going to church all of my life, but on June 1st, 2007, I was at a party with my coworkers, and I did a lot of things I really regret. With my boss, who was a married woman. Thankfully, praise be to God for protecting me from actually having any kind of intimacy with this woman, this adulterous whore. She was awful. She was evil. I couldn't believe that I had any kind of attraction to her. But that's how desperately wicked I was. But I held it. I held myself very nicely around all the people who mattered. And I'll be honest. A few months before that, I was going to a youth group. It wasn't the church I was going to, but it was a different church that actually had a youth group. Because my church didn't have any youth. But I was going because my friends were going. And there was a purity study about saving yourself for marriage. You did not be sleeping with people until you were married. And even then, it was only the person you were married to. So, it was that point when somebody finally told me, Matthew 5:27. You know what is written to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that even if a man were to look at a woman to lust after her, he has committed adultery with her in his heart. Now that's some pretty intense stuff. And that honestly is what really got me thinking. Now, I didn't go to that church. I just went to the youth group. So I didn't really have a chance to slip into the culture, which is really the whole point of this message. So my challenge to you is to think about this. Is church culture overshadowing the gospel? Think about that. Those of you listening, I really want you to think about that. I'm challenging you to give that very serious thought. Is your church culture overshadowing the gospel? Now, here's what I mean by that. Your church, whatever church it may be, we'll just pick a random church, Calvary Chapel. If you're talking to somebody and they ask you, what church do you go to? And you say Calvary Chapel, and they say, okay, that's a good church. You're fine. You're not necessarily at fault in this situation, but that mentality is kind of dangerous. Because even if you go to a doctrinally pure church like Calvary Chapel, it does not mean that you're saved. It does not mean that you're a strong Christian going there, just because you go there. So for people to just be like, oh, well, he's a Baptist, he's okay, he's fine. No, or I can't really think of a whole lot of other denominations that are really even okay. My point is, though, you should never just assume that somebody is completely okay just because they go to a church that is doctrinally sound. Because I'm sure I could probably go back and look at the doctrinal statements of the church I grew up in and probably would find it to be a very doctrinally sound church. But obviously, doctrinal purity is not the only thing to look at. You should also never assume that something is doctrinally pure just because it fits into the church culture of a doctrinally sound church. For instance, Beth Moore. There are a lot of Calvary Chapels that endorse her. She's a heretic. She is a raging heretic. And if you have a problem with that, feel free to comment. Feel free to call in. But she's a heretic. She teaches reptilian theology. How wacky is that? You may not have necessarily seen any of that in her stuff, because she doesn't really market that because it's a little weird. Right? This is not even really the message to be talking about why she's a heretic, but the fact of the matter is that she is. And if you want to find out more information about it, feel free to contact us. But there are a lot of Calvary Chapels in general that endorse her and invite her to speak. Does that mean that Beth Moore is okay just because Calvary Chapel thinks it's okay? No. Another thing that I deal with a lot. Being that I'm in the evangelical culture, you know, street evangelism, Charles Spurgeon is a favorite to quote when it comes to, you know, the way of the master. You know, and I love the way of the master. It is a very incredible teaching, you know, and it's very doctrinally sound. But people take Charles Spurgeon and put him on such a pedestal that, like, oh, Charles Spurgeon said it must be okay. That's where the problem is. See, Charles Spurgeon said a lot of good things. He's a very quotable pastor. But not everything he said was good. And that's also a message for another time of why he shouldn't necessarily put him on such a pedestal. Because he was just a man. Darn good preacher, but just a man. And it was the doctrine of man that he still had. You know, there are just times. So just because somebody quotes Charles Spurgeon does not mean that everything about their doctrine, that individual, is okay. Or, you know, on a much lighter note, you know, somebody might come into your church, you know, a young, hip guy with graphic tee, cool glasses, and a Bible that looks worn out, and it's an acceptable translation, like the New King James, you know, which is perfectly acceptable. You know, he knows all the lingo, and he's got like a cool tattoo on his forearm of like a cross and some sort of spiritual word like faith underneath it, you know, and then like another tattoo on the opposing arm of something else with another spiritual word. You know, let me just be very clear on this. I have no problem with that stuff. I think it's kind of neat. But if somebody walks in looking that part, it does not mean that they're this sound Christian, even if they're in this doctrinally sound church. For all you know, I mean, they could be fornicating with their girlfriend, you know, just shacking up all the time. They could be doing drugs and not at all being convicted about it. Because not everybody's perfect. Not at all. Not everybody's perfect. We're all a work in progress. We all have been brought out of the tomb, but we're 4 days dead. It's like, I'm not criticizing people for sinning. What I am criticizing is people who are phonies, who are faking it. And they look the part, and nobody thinks to ask them anything. Nobody thinks to really challenge them on a deep spiritual level. Because nobody challenged me on a deep spiritual level until I was 18 years old. You don't even have to necessarily confront them. In this case, nobody had to confront me. But they took the time to bring about the right conviction by mentioning how lust is adultery, pornography is adultery. That really struck me. It didn't change me on the spot. It took several months for it to really work its way into my carnal, you know, through my carnal mind. But it's just something that you need to think about as a Christian. If you have a friend who you're wondering about, they might have you fooled, because they might be fooling themselves too. You know, and that is a scary, scary thing, guys. I mean, Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 23, the most terrifying verses in the Bible for any Christian. If you are not absolutely terrified by this small passage, then you need to seriously consider where your salvation lies. So Matthew 7, verses 21 through 23, this is Jesus speaking. I can tell because the letters in my Bible are red. But Jesus said, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them," listen carefully, "'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Other translations will say, "You worker of iniquity." Them's mighty powerful words. Them are powerful words coming from our Lord and Savior. You yourself might even be in that situation where, yeah, you look the part. You listen to all the right music. You listen to the Sound of Life radio Or you listen to the bridge all the time. You know all the right names. You know all the right Bible quotes. You know all that stuff. But knowledge is not what gets you into heaven. Only repentance. If you have knowledge, but you are not forsaking your sins, then you are not saved. So today, I am calling the modern church to task to examine your belief, the body that you are responsible for. Whether you are a pastor or a member in the church, you all are responsible for each other. Because you may have a friend sitting right next to you in church who is not saved and has been going there for years and has more Bible knowledge than you. Because you know what? When I was young, when I was a little kid, I had people come up to me who were street preachers, and they asked me all the right questions, and I had all the right answers. But was I saved? No, I wasn't. I had them fooled. And if I could find those two street preachers, I'd go back to them, and I would tell them the truth. And I would thank them for taking the time to even try to talk to me. So, is church culture bad? No. But I do wonder how much of it really has crowded out the gospel. The last Sunday, on May 17th, I embarked on a new project. I decided to just take out all of the culture, including the building. So all we had were people, worship, and the gospel. That's all we had. Nothing fancy. I had my little cajon drum box, which for those of you who actually know what a cajon is, you know that's a recommended statement. For those of you who don't know what a cajon is, it's a drum box. And my sister and Lord and I and her kids, we did some worship music, classic hymns. I like classic hymns. You know what I don't like? I don't like when people take classic hymns and add stuff into it. Yeah, that's right, Chris Tomlin. I'm really mad at you for what you did to Amazing Grace. Every time I hear Amazing Grace, I brace myself after the second verse. Because I don't like the whole, my chains are gone, I've been set free. Once again, another message for another time. So all we did is we sang hymns. We prayed together. We had some fellowship with each other. We stopped and we talked with people. We were just on the street corner in the village of Rhinebeck in New York. And the results? Yeah, only two people stopped to talk. But there was no altar call. There was no conversion. Nothing like that. Nobody giving their hearts to Jesus. Granted, this is the first time I've done it as a church. I deliberately did it during church hours, between 10 and noon. Because I figured, whoever was going to be there obviously wasn't in church. So it's much less likely that they would be in church anyway. See, millions of dollars get spent each year in America with church trying to get people to come to church when all they need to do is just sacrifice their own church meeting for a moment, for a short time, and go out on Sunday morning. Because you know what people are doing on Sunday morning? Whenever they're not going to church or sleeping, they're out. They're out doing things. All those people who make excuses when you invite them to church because they feel like doing other things, meet them there. I'm not saying completely leave church, but be the church outside for a time. I also did it today, too. So I've done it twice now, which is very nice. And I'm sure you could probably tell that I'm still kind of in street preacher mode right now. It's that's why this message has been a little bit more intense than the previous messages are, because this is my second time preaching today. But only two people stopped In fact, I actually got some. I put the whole thing on recording. I didn't bring a cam. I brought the camera with me, but I didn't really feel like filming it, especially if nobody stopped to talk or listen. Because after a while, it just kind of gets to be the same thing. See, guys, Rhinebeck is a tough crowd. They are the very, very poster children of don't bother me. I mean, today, for instance, I was preaching. I was on my little soapbox. I wasn't even obstructing traffic in any way, shape, or form. And there would be people who were walking on the side of the sidewalk where I was. Only person on the sidewalk other than me. And they get so close to me, they just about knock me off my soapbox. I had to pull my Bible up out of their way because they were going to get clotheslined with it. And, you know, I didn't stop. I continued preaching. I didn't even drop my voice at all. So I was literally shouting in these people's ears. And multiple people did that to me. Just walking right by, and I just, you know, I was practically shouting. Actually, no practice. I was shouting in their ear, quite literally. And they didn't even stop and, you know, look at me like I was crazy. So obviously it's tough. And if there are any street preachers out there listening right now, please contact me. If you deal with this stuff yourself, please contact me. And I'm looking for some feedback on how to really get people to stop and listen. Because these people are rough. I mean, like, they're hard. They're hard to get attention because I will call people out intentionally and they'll just keep walking. Pretend they don't exist. It's kind of crazy. Because obviously, if I'm going to be spending all this time and effort preaching the gospel, I want to make sure people are hearing it. So anyway, last week, I did actually get someone to stop and listen for a short time. So I got it on recording. I took a little recording device and put it in my shirt pocket. So here's the conversation. I'm going to give a little commentary on it.
Must increase, and I must decrease, so he can increase. And that's what I'm. What?
There we go. Right there. He and she. This lady's wacko.
I wouldn't do that.
So I gave her my business card.
I wouldn't be able to follow you.
Well, but this is just—I would like to have, because I would like to have a discussion with you, even, you know, whether it's via email or over the phone. You know, that's my contact information.
Right here. I don't
my name's
like
Willie.
Hi, Willie.
Those kind of discussions.
What's your name? Leslie. That's very nice to meet you as well. You know, you definitely, there's definitely some things that I would like to talk to you about in a more like one-to-one, a more one-to-one setting, whether it's asynchronous, you know. So, you know, I think it'd be good to have a discussion with you. Because I understand the demographic of this place is people who are traveling. It's a tourist area, and, you know,
sure,
so
it really is a tourist area.
I definitely understand.
I'm not going to see a whole lot of people.
But yeah,
more
feel
than
free
one.
To call me anytime. Feel free to send me an email, and I would love to have a discussion with you.
It's a little hard to hear.
Live God without the church.
Without the church. What is your definition of the church, just so we're not assuming anything?
Very important thing to do.
The building.
Is
you don't need a building.
Make sure that they are.
But you need people.
You need
a community. That's for sure. But you don't need a building.
We have a definition of the same word that they have a different definition of.
It's a very simple question. I mean, you know, why N-O. I mean...
I'm glad I spelled that correctly.
You know, the Bible has something to say. My political alignment has absolutely nothing
trying,
to do with whether it's wrong or lie.
She's trying to throw politics into here.
Because I'm sure you're probably a Democrat, because you're saying, oh, well, maybe it's okay to lie from time to time. So you basically, so you're saying that it's okay to do whatever you think is right? You have to try to do the right thing. Well, how do you define right and wrong when you can't even give me a simple question, a simple answer? Well, how do you define hurt?
Yes, let's go, just don't hurt anybody.
I suppose not going to my husband right now.
Well, Leslie, it was very nice meeting you.
It was nice meeting you.
I would love, I really... I'm not done
yet.
I wish you good luck. It scares me. Bad.
And it scares me that you blur the lines and confuse people, because look at history, and every time it says people did what was right in their own eyes, unspeakable wickedness would occur. So, keep that in mind. I would love to hear from you. I'm not just trying to argue. I really, you know, I think you mean well.
Haven't followed a book.
Yeah, but we don't know what happens after. So, but... like your circular reasoning, I understand. So, but I really gotta let you get back to your husband. You know?
Yeah, seriously, like she's
no.
In some circles.
And right now, her husband is looking at me and looking at her with fire in his eyes. He is mad.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, she just,
but have a great day.
Go.
I'm gonna let you. Yeah, I'm gonna, you know, but feel free to contact me. I would love to have a dialogue with you.
Yeah, she's only gonna talk.
I really do want to have a dialogue with you. So I'll be waiting. I'll be checking my inbox.
She still hasn't contacted me yet.
All right.
Yeah. So, she, Leslie is her name, is the perfect example of Romans 1:18. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, and in this case women, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. She was very clearly suppressing the truth in unrighteousness. She would not say that it was wrong to lie. You know what you should do with people who won't admit it's wrong to lie? Treat them like they're just liars. They're not trustworthy people. If they are not against lying, then they're not trustworthy. That means they will lie to you about anything. So that's what I had to deal with last week. And yeah, I definitely got a good laugh out of it myself. But at the same time, I'm sure on the very same day, there were plenty of other massive churches, like our good buddy Joel Osteen, the pastor that American pastors love to hate. You know, I'm sure he did the altar call. Dim lights. Pleasant emotional music. Lay down your burdens. Lay down your shame. You know, pretty little piano stuff, and then, you know, and then the pastor is standing there going, just raise your hand, just raise your hand. Oh, I see that. God bless you, sir. Oh, just, oh, God bless you. God bless you. God bless you all. You know, a dozen people came to the Lord today, but I think there's more out there, so worship leader, do another round. Lay down your burdens. You know, oh, there's another one. God bless you. You know, I'm sure there were dozens of people all throughout America at the very same time that I was doing this stuff and having this conversation with this wacky lady. And dozens of quote-unquote decisions for Christ were made. Why is that? Why do you think that is? Well, these churches have a nice, warm, welcoming atmosphere, and it stirs your emotions. You have a very sincere, loving preacher who is very emotional when he gives the invitation. Now, is there anything wrong with that? Not at all. Not at all. But there is a difference between the Lord calling you, drawing you to himself, and just emotional manipulation. Because there's plenty of emotional manipulation going on in churches these days. There are churches where when they do the altar call, they will have people get up deliberately and go to the front. People who are already, you know, already members of the church just run. Because when other people see that one person getting up and going to the front, it just kind of compels them to do the same. So they're not alone. And I think that's just manipulative. That's wrong. Because you're lying. Like that person who came up first, he's not currently giving his life to Christ. He's just doing it to make you do it. Or they might, when they have people step forward, like you can bring the friend who invited you. You know, so that way, like when the cameras are on it, it looks like there's 100 people up there, when really it might only be 20 who actually went up there. So that's the certain point where it's like, okay, it's just manipulation. It's just, you know, you're just trying to get a show out of it. And that's when it starts getting in the way of the gospel. Another thing to look at is if your church culture is getting in the way of the gospel, is if you leave certain parts out of your altar call. You know, if you leave out the law, known as the Ten Commandments, if you don't make the sin personal, if you don't mention judgment, or if you don't mention the fact that there's heaven and hell, and that you're destined for one or the other. You know, and as far as sin, like I'm talking making it personal. You have lied. You have dishonored your parents. You have committed adultery. Think about your sin, not just, oh, we all have sinned. All have fallen short of the glory of God. We all do it. No, you are that man. I'm sorry, I have to laugh because I'm still recovering from my preaching. But, you know, but to make the sin personal makes the judgment reasonable. Because sin is not just, oh, sorry, you're not good enough. Sin is a crime against God. It is severe. It is so severe that burning in hell for eternity is reasonable. That's what a lot of people don't understand about their sin. People think that God is harsh, overbearing, and just nitpicky. Well, no, it's not that he's nitpicky. It's just that you have committed an unspeakably horrible crime. So if you leave that out, you leave out sin being personal, you leave out God's standards, people will think, oh, well, I'm not so bad, but clearly I need Jesus in my life, so okay, Jesus, come on into my life. You know, so you either get these people who are like, okay, well, I'm still a good person, but I guess I just need Jesus in my life, so fine, okay, Jesus, come into my life. Oh, okay, I got to say I'm a sinner. I'm a sinner, Jesus, come into my life. All right, cool, I'm all set. Where do I get a sandwich? I mean, and I know somebody. I served in street ministry with a man who, his testimony was exactly that. He said, I was the most boring person who's ever lived, and I decided to start going bowling with a Christian group, and they just said, come on, you need to give, you know, you need to let Jesus into your life. So I did. You know what? Just a couple weeks later, he's calling me up on the phone saying how, but he's gonna, you know, he's gonna like write a letter to the editor in the local newspaper threatening the pastor of the church just because the pastor of the church wouldn't talk to him. And he was threatening me, too. It was nuts. I mean, he was so crazy. Here's how crazy this guy is. I still have his number on my phone. So we're like, if I hear this, if I hear that, I know it's him, and I know not to answer my phone. That's how crazy this guy is. But that was his testimony. Was that, oh, my life is boring. I didn't do anything wrong. I just need Jesus in my life. So you either get that, and then, you know, you get people who go off the deep end, or you do wind up with genuine conversion, because I'm not going to say it's completely ineffective. It does work. And so please do not misunderstand what I'm saying here. When you show God's mercy and love, you point out why the cross is necessary, and you charge them to turn from their sin, or just accept Christ. You know, there are going to be people, especially like if you're at the Civic Center where there's 2,400 people out there in the audience, chances are, you know, some of them are at that point where they're right through the picking. That's all they needed to hear. So it's true. It can work. But I really honestly believe that you're narrowing down your audience by waiting for two times a year, Christmas and Easter, to have this big song and dance show in a giant venue where there's thousands of people around, and then do the altar call, hoping that there are some people out there who are all ready to go. You know what? The only reason those people are ready to go is because somebody else worked with them outside. If you don't do the work with them, you're not going to get those results. Do we save people? Not at all. It is the Lord who does the work. We got to be obedient and do our part. We got to do what God told us to do. We have got to be the one plowing up the ground, planting that seed, watering it, nurturing it, cultivating it. Only God can make it grow. And when they're ripe for the harvest, the fruit will come right off. But it is backbreaking work. It is heartbreaking. It is discouraging having to be the one plowing up the soil. It is hard. It is very hard. But I know that I gotta keep doing this. So, when you're preaching the gospel, you're not just preaching to those who are hurting, those who realize they're bad. Because a lot of people out there don't realize they're bad. You ask anybody on the street if they think they're a good person, 9 out of 10 will say yes. The 10th one will probably just be kind of weird. No. But it's a lot of work. And you gotta sift through a lot of people before you find that one that's got fruit. So don't forget about those other things. You know, about preaching the law, making sin personal, making sure that judgment is understandable, and that, you know, there's a real destiny. Draw concern. Show your motives. Show that your motives are pure right off the bat. The quicker, the better. Because there's a need. Everybody has a need to be right with God. Everybody does. Whether they want it or not is different. It is a need. You need to address the fact that we have to be right with God right off the bat. And you need to make sure that your motives are pure. But those things right there that I just mentioned, those are the kind of things that need to go on outside of church. Can they happen inside of church? Of course they can. It can happen anywhere. But you got to be mindful of the fact that there are going to be people who are going to come into that church, and they're only going to, they're going to raise their hand, and they're going to be treated like they're saved. Do you know what? I know somebody who goes to a church doctrinally sound, but this person flip-flopped between going to that church and being a Muslim, and now is back in the church again. You know how much that freaks me out? What if this person who converted to Islam and then came back to Christianity is really just a plant for ISIS or the Muslim Brotherhood or some sort of Muslim terrorist group, where this person converted to Islam for a short time just to get equipped, then come back into the church and earn the trust of those around them, and then do something horrific in the church from inside? What if? What if in your church right now, There is somebody fooling you. There is somebody who is a part of a terrorist organization who wants to blow up your church from the inside out. What if? What if you have somebody who's in your church who is a homosexual and has a whole lot of questions about homosexuality, but really all they're doing is trying to get the preacher to say a bunch of stuff that's incriminating so they can sue the church, put that whole place out of business, and even possibly put the preacher behind bars if they twist it a certain way. Guys, brethren, beloved, got to be careful. You have to be mindful of who's in your church. Just because they fit the culture does not mean they're safe. I'm not trying to instill paranoia into you, but we gotta do more work outside of the church to make sure people are okay in the church. Because believe me, you know, after having that guy, you know, blah, 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 guy, letting him get so close because he fits the culture, he looked the part. You know, he knew the lingo. That dude was off his rocker. I've had to deal with scam artists within my own church. Not my church, but the church I was going to. Never saw him again after we said no, that we weren't going to be a part of Amway. In the same church where all this stuff has happened, there was even a guy who was a part of one of the Bible studies. I mean, I knew the guy. I thought I knew him. But he went nuts, too. Caused so many problems, they had to ask him to leave. Good for them for asking him to leave. He showed up a couple weeks later, but handing out flyers saying that the pastors were pedophiles, you know, and threatening them in the church parking lot on a Sunday morning. So the pastor, who works in corrections, comes up and knocks this guy to the ground because he was a threat to everybody's safety. You know, but this guy was going to the church for years. He was a seminary student. He knew more about the Bible than I probably know, even after 7 years of studying it earnestly. He probably knew more about it than I do now. He had knowledge. He looked the part. He knew the lingo. But the guy was crazy. So, church, I'm calling you to task. Be watchful. Just because somebody quotes Charles Spurgeon does not mean that everything about them is okay. Just because they know all the right Bible verses in the Bible trivia quiz does not mean they're okay. Because you know what? I wasn't. I was not okay for 18 years. And for all of you who were nothing but good to me in nurturing me, you know, mom and dad, I love you and I'm sorry. I am deeply sorry for the fact that I had you on hold. But 1 John chapter 4, verse 1 comes to mind in all of this. It's a really good passage to know. Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Test your brothers and sisters in Christ. Test them. Be sure they understand. Because they're going to know all the right answers to all the right questions. You know? Test it. Be watchful. Keep all of that in mind. It's very important. I mean, it's of dire consequences to not pay attention to that. But truly, you can't just assume that everything's okay. We also cannot avoid culture. This culture is just a product of people getting together. You know, I mean, you get a group of people under one roof with the same passion, same interest, you're going to form a culture. It's when that culture becomes doctrine, and fitting into that culture suddenly becomes synonymous with salvation, that's when it becomes a problem. Same thing happens with tradition. You know, I mean, you have got to be willing, we, as in the church, we have got to be willing to strip our church down to bare-bone grassroots if we need to. Because otherwise, there's going to be problems. There's going to come a time where our church culture is not going to be allowed, or that the gospel is going to have to be taken out of our church culture. That's how it is in China. Church culture is definitely promoted and encouraged, but the gospel is illegal. So how do you have church without the gospel? You don't. That's how. See, I mean, culture is what makes great yogurt and cheese, and even certain kind of vaccinations, if you're okay with vaccines. But yogurt and cheese, they're good for your stomach. Penicillin, life-saving medicine, it's a culture. Bacterial culture, of course. And even alcohol, it's the result of a yeast culture. It preserves and sanitizes. So culture can be good. But culture can also be bad. Too much alcohol, obviously, is bad for you. It's still a result of yeast culture. Pathogens are bacterial cultures that make you sick. You know, those things really don't take much before it causes problems. And, you know, it's hard to identify early on. But I hope, and my prayer is, that you can identify these things. Don't ever assume anything. Do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits. Is there a clear-cut way to test spirits? No. Not at all. I mean, it does say it later on, but you know what? There are a lot of people who will say that Jesus is the Son of God. You know, Jesus is God's flesh. A lot of people will say that. But a lot of people acknowledge that stuff intellectually and they're not saved. There really is no clear-cut way. I can't just come up with a little trickety trick to identify these things. You just really need to be mindful. You know, and I'm not saying that we all need to be perfect. But if this sort of thing is going on in your church, then it needs to be dealt with. Even if it means asking them to leave. You know, even if they're like your elder, you know, like your associate pastor, you know, or the worship leader having an affair or something, like you need to ask them to leave if they're not gonna repent. Certainly need to ask them to step down if that sort of thing is going on. You might say, oh, but if we do that, we'll lose like 800 people and we'll only have 20 people in our giant building that we just renovated. Well, you know what that is? Fear and pride. It is better to have a handful of dedicated members who are genuine than masses of phonies. Keep that in mind. And that's why I'm starting this outside church project. And all it is, we go on the street corner about once a month. I'm going to be on the street corner, that same spot, hopefully once a week, Lord willing. But I'll still be going to church. But once a month, I'm going to be out there during church hours. And it's going to be church. It's really all it is. But as far as the full recording of that whole preaching last week and even for this week, just contact us. saltoftheoats@gmail.com and request a copy of it. In fact, actually, the first week is already on YouTube as an audio video. And we've got new tracks. The Thank God for Butts booklet is now available. We still have our great little postcard tracks. And our audio CDs are always available. Just ask. That's all you got to do. We're not going to put any strings on it. Thank you all again, and God bless.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have left for today, folks. But thank you for listening to the Set the Captives Free radio broadcast with Pastor Frank. For more information or to send a donation,